afternoon. Welcome back to Midday on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Gary Eichen. Glad you could join us. Governor Jesse Ventura is returning to the ring. According to a press release from the World Wrestling Federation, the governor will be participating in a big pay-per-view wrestling show at the Target Center next month. No word on whether the governor will be wrestling, refereeing, or doing something else during the program. More details are scheduled to be released tomorrow. But you never know, maybe we can get a little bit of a scoop today. If not, there are lots of other things to talk with the governor about.
There sure are, Gary.
Governor Jesse Ventura is our guest this hour, and we invite you to give us a call, 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. That's our Twin City area number, and outside the Twin Cities, 1-800-242-2828. 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. 2828. Governor Ventura, thanks for coming in.
My pleasure, Gary. You know I always enjoy coming over here. We do this about, well, once a month, don't we?
Well, it's been almost 2 months.
Has it now?
Yeah, it's been a little while.
But, no, I always enjoy coming over. Your show is terrific. You ask good questions, and you sure get to a lot of people out there, which is what I want to do. I want people to understand what I'm doing and to hear it from me rather than some of the other people that might put their particular spins on it. So it's a lot nicer to come over here and ask, answer questions when I can directly.
Well, are you going to wrestle?
Well, there's a news conference tomorrow, and to be fair to all media involved and all that, I'm not going to say what I'm going to do. I will be participating. It's been a scheduled event for a long time called SummerSlam. It's been scheduled for the Target Center for many, many months, and the World Wrestling Federation approached me and asked me if I would be interested in participating, and it came together, and I thought, why not? It's a Sunday night. It's here in the Twin Cities. It'll go pay-per-view and bring, more people will see Minnesota again, and it'll put us in the spotlight again. So, and that's part of my job, I think, in a lot of ways, is to keep Minnesota in the spotlight. And what the heck, it's no different than, and you use that to your advantage, Gary. And I think the advantage came when I went out and testified in front of Congress on the plight of the dairy farmer. You know, I had congressmen out there saying that, you know, we have these meetings and these, these committee meetings, and we can't force people in here. We could offer free lunch, and no one would come into our meeting. They said, you showed up, and we had them hanging from the rafters. We had television cameras, and we got a message across, and that was that the American dairy farmer, and especially the dairy farmer in Minnesota and Wisconsin, is being unfairly treated across America with the federal subsidy program that they have. I call it the Eau Claire thing. Mm-hmm. And there's no other better way to talk about it. I mean, farmers are subsidized in the dairy industry by how many miles they live from Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Which, I think you're a bright guy, Gary. You're just like me. You go, what has that got to do with anything?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's precisely it. It had something to do 60 years ago when you didn't have refrigerated trucks to transport milk and dairy products. Today you have them, so there's no purpose to have this whole Eau Claire thing. And I jokingly suggested we pick out Beaumont, Texas, because I said that would at least give our farmers 1,100 miles worth, but even better still, eliminate it all. Mm-hmm. Get down those barriers and let them compete on a level playing field.
Well, you know, on this wrestling deal,
sure,
already the criticism is coming in that, I think it's kind of twofold. Number one, that you should be attending to business as governor.
Well, that's Sunday. I don't do government's business on Sunday.
No.
That's my day.
And then the other part of it, it has to do with, I guess there's three parts. There's personal enrichment that you're using the governor's office
let's put it this way. If I had been let's say I had been an accomplished singer before being elected governor, and if one weekend they hired me at Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas to come and sing that weekend, do you think there would be this outcry? Do you think that it could be just because of my former profession? I mean, I used to do this for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like I'm going into something that I don't, a business I don't know. I'm doing it on my own time. It's Sunday evening. I don't do the state's business on Sunday evening. I do personal things on Sunday. I've set up that policy from the beginning. Now, I have broken it on occasion when I had to call that one particular press conference during the legislative session. I did work on a Sunday that day. When something extremely important happens, I will. But generally speaking, I always, and I tell everybody on my staff, and I urge all Minnesotans to take at least one day a week off and be with their families or do personal things. And this is a Sunday night in Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. I'm not traveling anywhere. I'm not leaving town. It is not taking me 1 minute away from my job as governor, which I put first on the list.
The other, I guess the third thing that's come up here is that it's demeaning to the office of governor to get involved at this stage in the professional wrestling business.
Why? I was elected. I love it. The media does nothing, but all through the election, they brought up the fact that I'm a former pro wrestler. I remember how I had to battle the media on every story they would write. They would never write former mayor. That was never written, former mayor. Yet it was politics, wasn't it? Yet the media had no problem to always say, former pro wrestler, who's now running for governor, former pro wrestler. Well, now that I step back and do what I used to do, somehow they find fault in that? What law is being broken here? What ethic is nothing? There's nothing. Now, isn't it interesting? I pick up this morning's very paper, and the mayor of St. Paul is going to take a paid radio position. Where's the outcry? See, from Republicans, he's an entrepreneur. But for me, I'm not a Republican, I guess. So, all of a sudden there's an outcry. I had to laugh. The head of the Republican Party chastises me in the paper today, right? And yet makes no mention that their nominee for governor is now taking a paid radio position on the weekend. My radio show that I do is unpaid. Mm-hmm. I'm not being compensated for it. It's just a way for me to relate to the people and speak directly to them. And I felt it was a good medium to do. I have experience. I've worked in the business for going on 3, 4, 5 years. I've been in the radio business. I'm still, a citizen governor, which means I still have private enterprise in Jesse Ventura's life. Because when I'm done being governor, Gary, guess what? I'm going back to what I used to do. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to be... There's the difference right there. That is the whole problem to this whole thing, is that the media and the perception is that people need to be professional politicians and that therefore being a politician is your entire life. Well, it's not Jesse Ventura's entire life, and I think I was elected upon the fact that I came from being a private citizen. I'm now serving as governor, and when I'm done being governor, I will go back to being a private citizen and back to private enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
Now, would I be illegal for me to play the stock market? Let's say I was a stockbroker before I got elected, and let's say then on certain days I went and played the market and made money. Would there be an outcry? Would there be, wait a minute, how can the governor do this? If I had been a stockbroker before, and maybe a good one, let's say I'd been a highly successful stockbroker, and then all of a sudden I would have started playing stocks while being governor and making money, would there be an outcry?
I don't want to dwell on the wrestling thing.
I don't either.
But I just one more question
sure.
related to that, and that is part of the criticism, I think, has to do with not the participation in professional wrestling, at least professional wrestling as it was when you were a professional wrestler. There's an argument, though, that says that the whole nature of that business has changed, that it's become kind of raunchy and
then
ugly.
Maybe it's time I come back and straighten it out, isn't it? Maybe it's time that someone like me step in and bring it back to what they say it used to be. Never think of that one?
Going to clean it up?
I don't know. Depends what my role will be in it. But, the whole point of the matter is that let's talk about what this really is. This is politics. and the only people who are complaining are my political opponents.
No, no, that's not true.
Oh, Gary.
No, there are regular people. I got a call this morning, Governor, from some listener who is not a politician. Sorry, I never heard from the guy, but he sounded just like a regular listener, and he was actually sounded like a Jesse Ventura supporter, more or less, but he's kind of troubled by all of this, and he wanted me to make sure that I asked these
questions. But why would one be troubled?
I don't
know. Like I said, if I were a nightclub singer and I went to do a stint in Vegas and sang, would they be troubled?
Well, if you're supposed to be governor?
I am governor. But there's no rule that says a governor can't have fun. There's no rule that says a governor on his own time can't be a human. There's nothing that says that.
Okay.
And I'm going to continue. You know, the big message I get from the people out there is, Jesse, stay Jesse. That's what they keep telling me.
You're going to clean up pro wrestling?
Oh, I don't know if I will. But there seems to be some indication that it needs it. Well, maybe it needs some government intervention then.
Let's get some listeners on the line here. Richard's on the line from Duluth with a question. Go ahead, Richard.
Yes, good afternoon, Governor.
Hi, Richard, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good, and I hope you continue having fun while you're in office.
Thank you, Richard, I appreciate
that. However, I do have a media question for you. In the front page of the Duluth News Tribune this morning, Lee Bloomquist wrote quite a critical and sarcastic article about you visiting northern Minnesota, not visiting the flood victims and that type of thing. Have you seen that article?
Not visiting the flood victims? We flew over the floods.
Yeah. Well,
I only had so much time.
Yeah.
He was
criticizing the fact that you didn't go to their houses and visit. But I would like your analysis of your visit to the damaged area.
Sure. My analysis was this. We first left yesterday and we flew up to the boundary waters and we viewed the devastation that took place from the storm over July 4th. We saw what it did. And again, I want to reassure Minnesotans and everyone, if you have a vacation plan, go, because certainly not all of the boundary waters was affected by this storm. Yes, there's a portion that took some very heavy damage, but by no means should anyone cancel their vacations. By no means should anybody change their plans if you're looking to enjoy the outdoors of northern Minnesota up there, because it's still there. It was just an act of nature that took place, and being the great Minnesotans we are, we will recover from it. So we looked at the damage done by the storm. Then from there, we flew on to International Falls, where I named another, the judge up there in, now I'm going to forget how you say the name. It's Chinkaching or
Coochiching.
Coochiching. There we go. I always forget that. The name of the county up there. Coochiching. There you got it. We named a new judge, Judge LeDuc. Chad LeDuc, and I couldn't believe the popularity. I mean, when I said his name, there was like a 3 or 4 minute standing ovation in the courthouse, packed to the rafters. So apparently I made a good choice with the people up there. But we named Judge LeDuc, who will now be the new district judge. So I did that at noontime. When we finished at noon, we then flew over past Rosso and over into the valley, and we took an aerial view of the devastation that's happened to the farm country up there. And it is devastating. And let me say this, that we'll get to politics here a little.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we gave out relief to farmers, but the House said it had to be across-the-board relief to every farmer equal, whether you needed it or not. Well, I wish that they would have flown up there and taken a look at the Northwest farmers who couldn't even get a crop in, and to know that there will be farmers getting subsidized who don't need it, and then there's farmers like many of these that couldn't even get a crop in because Mother Nature has been unkind to them for the fourth or fifth year in a row. Those were the farmers I tried to specifically target with my relief package, but unfortunately the legislature said no, targeted relief is no go. We give across the board relief or nothing at all. That was the Republican response, and that's, I felt, well, anything's better than nothing, so I went along with it. I did not sign the bill. I simply let it go into law without signing it as a protest.
Todd, he's on the line from Ottenaugan. Go ahead, please.
Jesse, hi.
Hi.
Your neighbors in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. Just a kudo first on the good work you've been doing, and good for you, Jesse. Go for it. Don't sweat the criticism in the media. My question is, how do you plan to enhance and encourage more people to come to the northern part of Minnesota as tourists, as tourism is yours and our probably biggest industry that we have.
Well, what we did this year is I increased the tourism budget dramatically. In my biannual budget, I saw tourism when they showed me, I'm a businessman, I come from the business world, I come from the private sector, and when they showed me facts that showed for every $1 that we spend, we get a $9 return. That's what we get in tourism. I looked at that and said, why aren't we investing in this? You know, people can say what they want about the World Wrestling Federation, but one thing I learned from Vince McMahon with my years of dealing with him is, in order to make money, you have to spend money. That's a common law business. And I think the business of tourism in this state, if we're going to invest in it, then we need to spend some money on it, and you need to invest in it. And when you're getting a 9-to-1 return, you go to any business person out there in the private sector, they will tell you to invest in anything on a 3-to-1 return. That's huge. We get $9 return for every $1 we invest. So what I did as governor, I made it a much higher priority in my biannual budget. I more than doubled their increase in tourism spending, and hopefully it's going to pay off for us, because we've got a tremendous, from border to border in the state of Minnesota, there's something for everybody. I mean, here in the Twin Cities, you've got Mall of America, you've got all the tourist things to do here in the city, as well as what the caller said, northern Minnesota. What better place to get away from it all? What better place if you want 2 weeks of quiet solitude, slap a mosquito now and then or whatever, and enjoy just getting away from it all and whatever? There's no better place in the world to go than northern Minnesota. But it's our job to promote that, and it's our job to sell it. And I think what I've done is, by increasing our tourism budget, I think that'll answer the call.
In terms of business development and the like, economic development, is there anything that state government could or should do to try to prevent more Honeywells? Of course, Honeywell was bought out. Now, well, St. Paul Companies has got to sell off part of its business to remain strong. Anything that you guys can do to...
Well, we can keep corporate taxes, attempt to lower them, and attempt to make it the best working conditions you can get in Minnesota. But you have to remember, Gary, a lot of that's Darwinian of business. The big eat the small. It's the nature of business today. You know, when if you have a medium-sized company, it becomes very profitable to sell that company off and be absorbed by a larger company, and that's just part of business. And it's not our job as government to interfere in the conduct of business, I don't think, unless you've got, situations of monopolizing.
Do we have a
things
good,
of that nature? Then, of course, government should come in if you've got that type of situation happening. But if there's no monopoly happening, then I as government have no, you know, shouldn't be in there making calls on what private business does.
Is there anything that the state government should do over and above what it's doing now to help the workers who get displaced by this Darwinism?
Well, we have in our one state government agency, there is a fund that sits available for people, for displaced workers, and people can apply to that, and it's much the same as an unemployment type situation, where if they've been displaced, they can get relief from the state of Minnesota. I forget which department it falls under right now, but it's one of the labor departments that we have.
Mm-hmm. And you think what we have now is probably sufficient?
Oh, yeah. In fact, they've been trying to grab that money because it's been overabundant. I actually lowered it because it was taking in too much money, more than what was being used. It was building too much of a excess of money on it.
Mm-hmm. Bob, your question?
Governor, when you were on NPR in January, I asserted that there wasn't adequate housing available for the hundreds of homeless in the Twin Cities. And my question to you was, what would you do about it as governor? And your response was that people are often homeless because they want to be homeless. But I think the facts in the homelessness show that many people are homeless because they suffer from mental problems or chemical addiction, including a large number of Vietnam vets. In addition, many of the homeless are actually working, but they don't earn enough money to accumulate the $800 to $1,000 or more they need to pay for the first month's rent and security deposits on an apartment. And being homeless, they don't have the rental references they need to gain acceptance by landlords. I know that you increase state money for affordable housing, which definitely helps, but what is actually needed is an allocation of funds to pay for decent facilities for the hundreds of homeless who don't have the money or the personal stability to gain access to so-called affordable housing. I would hope that as governor, you would check out the homeless scene and be more helpful.
I'll do what I can, but it also falls, sir, under personal responsibility. You know, okay, if we subsidize them momentarily and we get them into a home, as this particular caller said, if they're drug abusers or alcoholics or whatever personal choices they make in their life, if they become non-self-sufficient and can't go on to pay the rent, does it then become our responsibility to ensure that they get their rent paid every month? I don't think so. You know, it falls under personal responsibility of your own life and the choices that you make during it. Sure, government should be there to help out. Sure, we should give a helping hand and try to get every citizen to take part in society. But if there's an old saying, you can only help those that want to help themselves. And if they so choose to make life decisions that do not help themselves, well, then you're sending money down an endless drain. And I don't want to seem hardcore or anything, but again, people want to have to help themselves before we can help them.
Are we helping enough of the people who do want to help themselves, though? I mean, obviously, there are some people who, as you say, I mean, they're just not going to get with the program. But it also seems like there are large numbers of people who, if we could give them a little help, would actually get rolling.
Well, I with the tobacco money, I tried to create a family endowment plan that would do that, but the legislature wouldn't go for it right now.
What about,
you know, which would bridge that gap to where we'd actually use tobacco money to help do that. Money that doesn't come from your pocket or mine, Gary. If you're not a smoker, you're not, I don't think, and I'm not. So, you know, this was free money we could have used, but again, it becomes a battle of the legislature over there and what their priorities are, and you have to compromise with them.
Is that something you think might be worth pursuing next legislative session?
I think absolutely, because, you know, on the welfare to work, you've got a 5-year limitation now, and some people are not going to make it. Some people are going to require more than 5 years. And we need to find some mechanism to bridge that gap for them, to keep them participating so that hopefully they can get off welfare, so that hopefully they can afford housing and things of that nature. But again, I already helped out a lot of people when, you know, in writing my book, people got so angry over my book. And yet my revelation that I didn't wear underwear got us 12,000 free pairs of underwear, didn't it, to the Dorothy Day Center and to Sharing and Caring Hands. And I at first thought, well, what good would underwear? Why not long underwear? This is Minnesota. But I came to find out that's exactly what they needed, because nobody, Gary, ever gives underwear. People will give a shirt, they'll give a stocking hat, they'll give a sweater, but no one will ever go to any of these places, and certainly no one wants secondhand underwear. You know, that's something, you know, no matter who you are, I don't think that's high on your list. You know, of getting, well, you laugh about it, but in reality, it's very true. And so, you know, we Fruit of the Loom donated 12,000 pairs of underwear to people. And so I'm attempting to do my part. Again, underwear is not housing, but people have to realize they got to help themselves. And if they're drug dependent or alcoholics, well, they need to clean up their act so that they're not dependent on a chemical, and then move forward from there.
Amber, you're next.
Hi, boys. Thank you for taking my call. Mr. Ventura, I didn't really have a question. I just wanted to thank you, I guess, as a public citizen and as, I don't know, just to someone who really admires you. I don't always agree with you on all the issues, and that's to be expected.
Sure, normal.
But at least I know where you stand on the issues, and I think that's a very noble quality, not only, especially in a politician, but on a personal level, I think more people need to be. You're not vague and you're not obscure. Like, I mean, I've been listening to the show, and you're just, you know, people don't always agree with you, but you just lay it out, and I think that's really great, and I guess that was my comment.
Well,
so
thank you very much. I appreciate that very much, and certainly we will not agree on every issue, and certainly I'll make mistakes just as everyone else makes mistakes, and I'm certainly not a perfect person, but I think when people understand that I give it my full attention and 100% of my ability, then that's all you can ask of anyone.
Let me ask you this, Governor, along those lines. Mike McCurry, former White House press secretary, is in town a couple weeks ago, and during the course of his speech said that one of the reasons he thinks people have responded so well to you, taken to you around the country, is that you are plain spoken, get to the point, say what you're thinking. And he would hope, he said, he would hope other politicians would emulate that trait. Do you think that more politicians are going to start speaking their mind as you do?
I think they'll attempt to, Gary, but until they rid themselves of special interest and PAC money, they're not going to be able to. Because until you rid your, see, the great thing that I was blessed with in coming into this governorship was the fact I didn't owe anybody a thing. No one. I came in with no lobbying group that supported me. I came in not owing, because the Reform Party really, with our tight rules on campaign finance, so I don't even owe the Reform Party per se. But all other candidates, they have to fall into lockstep with their party. They have to fall into lockstep with pundits and political special interest groups, PAC money and all of that stuff, unions that pay their way to become governor. I didn't have that. So it affords me great freedom, I think, to be able to speak freely. Because I don't have to worry if I step on someone's toes that this group or whatever will come back and say, hey, wait a minute, we helped finance you where you're at. You better take a different position and don't you be saying stuff like that about us.
So campaign
finance reform,
I think is
really a key to having a freedom like me. And getting back to your original question, that's why I don't think they will try to emulate me. They will try to make people believe they are me and can do the same thing. But until they get rid of PAC money, get rid of special interest money, they can't do it because they have strings attached to them. I don't have any strings attached to me.
Governor Jesse Ventura is our guest this hour. We have a full bank of callers, but let me give you the number, jot it down, and when we get through a few more callers, some of our lines will open up. 651-227-6000, that's our Twin City number, 651-227-6000. Outside the Twin Cities, 1-800-242-2828. We'll get to some more callers right after some news headlines. Here's Greta Cunningham. Greta?
Good afternoon, Gary. The FBI says suspected serial killer Rafael Resendez Ramirez is in custody in Texas after turning himself into authorities. An INS spokeswoman says he apparently walked up to an INS officer in El Paso, Texas, and identified himself. A Texas Ranger then took him into custody. Resendez Ramirez is charged in two murders and has been linked to six other killings along or near railroad tracks. Senators today are going to debate the various plans for the Patients' Bill of Rights. Democrats are offering amendments that are aimed at providing better emergency room protections for Americans in managed care. Republicans claim the Democrats' measure would raise the cost of insurance and lead employers to drop coverage for their workers. House Republicans are unveiling their proposal for an $864 billion tax relief package. The highlight of the plan is a 10% across-the-board reduction in income tax rates over 10 years. The Republican plan would cut capital gains tax rates for individuals and corporations. It would also eventually abolish estate taxes and eliminate the so-called marriage penalty paid by two-income couples. Democrats claim the wealthy would benefit the most, and they warn the massive GOP bill would require deep cuts in important programs. In regional news, Minnesotans can expect a little more in their sales tax rebate check. The total rebate will be worth $1.3 billion, slightly more than the $1.25 billion the legislature approved. The average rebate will be $652, or $24 more than originally expected. Nine investigative teams from the Federal Emergency Management Agency are viewing storm damage in northeastern Minnesota today. Two of the teams will help people whose homes were damaged in the July 4th flood. Officials say the state's uninsured losses in roads, bridges, and other structures totals $19 million. The forecast for Minnesota today calls for partly cloudy skies statewide, with high temperatures mainly in the 80s. Around the region at this hour, Duluth reports sunshine and 70 degrees. Rochester mostly sunny and 75. Fargo, mostly sunny and 80, and in the Twin Cities, partly sunny skies, a temperature of 79. Gary, that's a look at the latest news.
Thank you, Greta. 25 minutes before 1, our guest this hour, Minnesota Governor Jesse Ventura. He's come by to take listener questions, talk about some of the issues facing the state. While Greta was doing the newscast, we were talking about the issue of lawn darts, a subject that the governor covered on his radio program last Friday. You know, this leads me then to, and for those of you who aren't aware, apparently there there's a federal law banning lawn darts.
Yes.
And quite a list.
There's even an 800 number that if you see them, you can call and they'll be properly disposed of, kind of like uranium or nuclear waste.
Well, that brings to mind a more serious,
all right,
but related subject, and that is the business of the speed limits on the St. Croix after the horrible accident over there. And you said that you didn't think there was any need for speed limits on the river, legislating stupidity again.
Yeah.
But how does that differ from...
They already broke laws in this tragedy. Laws were broken, Gary. If they had obeyed the laws, probably everyone would be alive today.
Mm-hmm. But how would that differ from having a speed limit on a highway?
Well, it again, maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. It's called common sense. It's called, your ability to... I believe there are probably speed limits indirectly on waterways.
Mm-hmm.
If you're endangering anyone, you are breaking the law. And if you're doing excessive speed in what is considered, you know, crowded boating areas, you can be tagged. Absolutely you can. So, you know, by simply us passing more laws, again, that isn't going to legislate stupidity. You know, in light of this tragedy that happens, the stupidity was very high, would you agree?
Don't know the details of the case, but
well, it was dark and they were going at excessive speeds, and obviously I there was allegedly alcohol involved. I know the report I read said that there were beer cans in the bottom of one of the boats. Mm-hmm. And they had just come from a bar, and allegedly, I don't know, they were getting the toxic reports or whatever were due to come out, but in light, let's say allegedly they happened to have been consuming alcohol, well, you're not supposed to consume alcohol and drive a boat, the same as a car.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to the phones. Willie?
Yes, hello.
Hi, Willie.
Greetings, Your Honor. I'm calling from Duluth, Minnesota. That's probably right now it's pretty tropical up here. The palm trees are swaying and the sand is nice and golden up here. I got a question. I was wondering if you could answer it for me.
Go ahead.
Okay, the question is right now up here in the state of Minnesota, over a long period of time, I've lived here all my life, I've been noticing there's been a lot of really, how best can I put it, a lot of ridiculous laws being put into effect that basically, you know, it's like you were saying before, common sense. Specifically here in Duluth, just recently the city council passed a city ordinance saying that car radios can only be played at a certain volume.
Decibel
and
level.
If the car radio should happen to be heard 50 feet away, you could be fined a certain amount of money.
Okay, you want the governor to comment, or you want him to do something, put the arm on the Duluth City Council?
Again,
well, I know you can't do that, but I just like to have him comment.
Well,
consisting.
You know, again, you've got government stepping into individuals' lives and all that, and you'd think that people would have enough common sense to know that, you know, if their radio or stereo in their car is up too loud, that they, you know, that they would turn it down, you know, in just being good neighbors. But I don't think it requires government to come in and mandate. And the best thing I can tell you is if you don't like the local laws being passed, that's why you have elections. Mm-hmm. If you don't like what the local elected officials are doing in your life, then vote them out of office and get other people in there. Again, it comes down to, I think, government overstepping in a lot of ways what should be just common sense and common decency between people, that we don't need government out there telling us what volume to play our radio at.
But, you know, like in your book, you had an interesting story, I thought, about after you were back here. I think you were the mayor at the time. Maybe not. But at any rate, there was a party out by your house, big loud party, I think, with a bunch of bikers. And it was too loud for you. And so you
at 4 in the morning.
And you went.
I let him go till 3. 3 I didn't have a problem. At 4 it was too loud.
And then you moved them out. Well,
yep.
Now that wouldn't be an option for anybody else because most other people aren't your size, and so isn't that isn't that a, although that seems like a picayune kind of thing for government to get involved
no,
in.
No, not at all. You have every right to call up your police department and say, look, and I'm sure they will come out and assess the situation. They will drive out, and I'm sure if a squad car pulls up and is three blocks away at 4 a.m. and hears very loud music, there are noise ordinances, and that's quite appropriate to do something like that. But I think it goes beyond when it's noon. You know, and some car happens to just pull up to a stoplight with loud music playing out of a convertible top. I don't think we need to be running around.
So it isn't a question of these areas are clearly off limits for government. It's just more a matter of sometimes the laws go a little bit too far.
Well, sometimes it's a matter of, again, getting back to common sense. If loud music is blaring at 3 o'clock in the morning, that's quite different than loud music blaring at 3 p.m.
Mm-hmm. Harry is on the line from International Falls. Good morning or good afternoon, Harry.
Hi, Governor.
Hi, Harry.
Nice to talk to you. Don't sweat the media quite as much as you're doing. When you destroy a Minnesota icon like Skip Humphrey, the media are going to give you hell, even if you were the Virgin Mary.
I'll remember that.
don't worry about it. My question is,
okay.
in the Border Lakes country,
yep.
We have been having a war with our Canadian neighbors over fishing for nigh on 5 or 6 years now.
I'm well aware of it.
And it seems to me that somebody with responsibility has to sit down and negotiate with our neighbors. Yeah, a lot of the things they're asking are very reasonable. I'm a U.S. citizen. But I live here on the Border Lakes, and as a matter of fact, my place is in Canada. But I think we've got to sit down with the Premier of Ontario and compromise and negotiate this thing rather than just sitting on our hands and doing nothing.
And believe it or not, I'm on top of that. I've already written 2 or 3 correspondence to the ambassador in Washington, D.C. I just met with the Canadian embassy while I was out in Washington, D.C. and brought up that same subject. And the key to it is they just got through with their elections, and now they've got their heads of Ontario and all that are in place, and so meetings are going to take place, and rest assured that I'm very much on top of that fishing situation up there on the border, and I've been dealing with it for 2 to 3 months right now. But again, like in any government dealings, the bureaucratic red tape takes place, and especially if you think it's bad enough dealing with our own government, the moment you start crossing international boundary lines, it becomes even more red tape involved. But I am on top of the situation, and I think you'll see some results coming up, some compromises and some dealings that we can hopefully put this matter to rest once and for all and have everybody enjoy fishing along the borders up there without the two countries nitpicking each other over what's going to happen.
Let me shift gears here to light rail. Now, since we last talked a couple months ago, cost estimates seem to be rising on the ever rising on the Hiawatha line, and is there any limit, upper limit, as to what the state should do?
State's already limited. Our cost won't go up at all.
Are you worried that that's going to turn into a some people say is a $1 billion boondoggle?
Well, if it does, there hasn't been one spade put in the ground yet. You know, I mean, if it gets out of hand, but let's remember something. Traffic in the Twin Cities is not going to get any better. It's at its best right now. Do you know how bad it was for me the other day? I left my house up in Maple Grove to drive to downtown St. Paul. I left at 7:15 in the morning, and it took me 1 hour and 10 minutes to get from Maple Grove to St. Paul. Because traffic up on 94, where it separates from 494 and 94 up there, it's now backed up all the way to 95th Avenue North. There was no accident, and it was a beautiful sunny day.
But for light rail to materially impact and help with that congestion problem, I mean, it's going to take more than one line.
Oh, absolutely. We've got to look at putting a commuter rail down from St. Cloud to the Twin Cities, Gary.
And if it costs this much
now, what's it going to cost 10 years from now?
but how much would it cost to build a system, do you think? In other words, are you prepared as governor to support building a system big enough to actually reduce the congestion that you're talking about?
I'm prepared to build a system that will give people, hopefully in many areas, an alternative method of transportation. You can't make people not drive. If people want to drive cars, this is America, they can do it. But if you can offer them a solid alternative, a different mechanism that's simpler, safe, economical to get to and from where they need to go, in which to keep their cars off the road and make it that much more open for the other people that choose not, that choose to drive cars, I think it's our job to do that. You can't build your way out of congestion, Gary. There's no city in America that's done it. And when you start adding up, what does light rail cost? Well, what does another freeway cost? And what is the maintenance to that freeway cost us? What did the interchange over there on 394 and Highway 100 cost?
But you're not
unbelievable.
But you're not going to spend any more money on that particular line.
No, in fact, the state's participation in it. I was given a message saying that our participation is what it is right now, and it'll be no more.
Okay.
So any more of it could come from the federal end.
Rebecca, you're next. Your question for the governor?
Hi. Yeah. I never heard the turnout on what you guys had planned to do with the tobacco settlement money. And my question was, and another point to that, was, Jesse, you had tried to get some people to side with the idea of putting it towards like a medical savings account. Well, why not put that towards Clinic 42? And because the AIDS crisis is still going on.
Well, first of all, I didn't side with putting it towards a medical savings account. What I wanted to do with tobacco money on the medical side was put it into an endowment to where the principal would never be touched. So the tobacco money principal will always be there. What I wanted to do was use portion of that for medical research, both for the University of Minnesota as well as the Mayo Clinic, because again, I'll reiterate, my standard thing is, what price tag do you put on your health? And if we can create good health research out there to where we can be solving many health problems, it's going to cross borders to where every person in Minnesota will be touched in one way or another by that tobacco money. And I think that's extremely important, because tobacco money is, it's caused a lot of harm. Tobacco has caused harm. No one will deny that. And if we can make a positive out of this, and again, we're not touching the principal. The principal will always be there. We're only going to use the profits from it.
Sally, you're next.
Hi.
Hi, Sally.
How are you?
Good.
I'm calling because I believe you've been real supportive of education. And I believe that you would think that teachers, need the best training possible. And what I would like to ask is, since parents are a child's first teacher, and yet many of us do not get training for that, and many people parent simply the way they were parented, which in many cases has not been good. I wonder where you stand on supporting parents as teachers, and I'd like to know what your administration has done or intends to do.
Well, first of all, if you want my personal viewpoint on it, and I'll tell you this quite clearly and honestly, don't become a parent until you're ready to be one. And I say that very clearly, that a parenting and having a child is a minimum of an 18-year commitment that you have to be prepared to do as a mother or as a father, of giving a minimum of 18 years to that child. That just doesn't mean going through the sex act and having the fun part about it and giving birth. That's just the beginning of it. From birth on is when the real job starts, not lightening the fact that carrying a child and giving birth isn't tough. My wife did it twice, and I was in there for both of them. But again, the parenting starts from birth on, and people need to accept that responsibility of not having children unless they are prepared to be parents. And that's a real situation that we have out there, is to be prepared to be a parent, both financially and everything else. My wife and I, and I'll just use us as an example because it's the only one I truly can use. When I was on the road wrestling during my wrestling career, we chose not to have children at that time because it was not the right environment to bring them up in. We couldn't be full-time parents until we came back here to Minnesota, got settled down. Financially, I was in good shape, and it was at that point in time we decided to become parents. But again, government can be used to support, but I don't necessarily think government should start acting as a parent. I don't think that that's the role of government. I don't think in any constitution that you read, be it the state constitution or the federal one, does it ever say that government is to be the parent of children, parents' parent. And if parents don't get it, then they better go seek help. Go talk to someone who's a successful parent. Go somewhere. There's plenty of agencies out there that'll help you. There's plenty of nonprofits out there that'll help you. But you have to go seek help. If you're having problem being a parent, then go out and seek help and find it on your own. Don't sit around and say, well, it's government's job to come and teach me how to be a parent.
What about the argument, Governor, that the ones who really suffer if the parents don't get that help are the kids, and that they should be, they really shouldn't be held to blame, or they shouldn't be harmed by their parents' lack of information, lack of ability.
Yeah, that's true.
Doesn't government have some role there to do what they can to help the kids?
I suppose we do, yeah. I would say we do have some role to do there, along with charities, along with churches, along with all the other private sector entities out there that also have a role. We as a society have a role to play. And it doesn't always have to be via the government to do it. Mm-hmm. You know, it can be a neighbor, it can be a grandparent, it can be, you know, the interesting thing we can learn from the Oriental culture is how well they treat their family units over there, at least in the past. I hope it isn't breaking down, but that you go to the Orient and you watch how grandparents to parents to children are all kept in that family tree, and they all pitch in to help each other. It isn't just two people running off and saying, government help me. Go to your family. Go to your larger family for help.
Kevin, your question for the governor?
Yes, before I get to my question, Mr. Governor, I want to quickly thank you for your plug of the Boundary Waters Canoe Area earlier in the broadcast.
Oh, you're welcome.
No doubt this unique wilderness will always recover from natural phenomenon, but not from man-made development and destruction. And now for my question. I believe you when you say that you will do not intend to actively run for president in 2000, but will you encourage or at least not discourage some sort of write-in campaign?
Oh.
And if so successfully recruited by the voters, will you accept the position?
Oh, geez. First of all, I guess I'd have to if I won, wouldn't I? But the likeliness of that, I mean, for me to defeat George Bush after he's raised $37 million and to not even be a candidate, I'd say my chances are slim to none. But absolutely, and I say this not in pumping myself, this is America. And when you walk into that voter's booth, you vote for whomever you want to be the president of the United States of America. And if you want to write me in, God bless you. You know, I'm certainly not going to discourage that. That's every voter's right to write in or vote for the person of their choice, no matter who it is. If you want to write in Gary Aitken, be happy to write in Gary, and then just imagine, we'd all have relief. We'll send him to Washington, and he won't be here at noon anymore. But no, I am in all seriousness. The enjoyment of voting is to vote your heart and your conscience. And so when you walk in that booth, if you vote your heart and your conscience, you vote for the candidate of your choice.
Now, you're not going to discourage people from writing your name in. Are you encouraging them, just to get this clarified?
No.
Okay.
I'm not running. But if they so choose to want to vote for me as a form of protest, as a form of whatever they would feel, if they feel I'm the best candidate to be president, they certainly, that's their prerogative. The one great thing about this country, you walk in that voting booth, you can vote for Elmer Fudd if you want to.
Are you going to be fairly active in trying to to find a candidate to run for president on the Reform Party ticket who would have a legitimate chance to win, not just kind of, you know, get
out. I'll be active and supportive, but Gary, my first job is to govern Minnesota. My job is not to be like a typical career politician and start worrying about what the national party is doing. We have leadership in our national party. We have delegates in our national party. The convention's in a couple weeks, and then we'll have another convention next summer where probably the actual candidate would get endorsed at that time. And certainly, certainly I would support whatever candidate the party comes up with. Yeah, you know, to choose, but I don't think it's my place to go there. And my main job, I'm an elected official, and my main job is to govern the state of Minnesota, not worry about National Reform Party politics.
You think the Reform Party ought to be open to a candidate like Senator Bob Smith? There was some who dropped out as a Republican today. He said he couldn't take that party anymore, and he's going to run as an independent.
Well,
pretty conservative guy.
He would have to join the Reform Party.
Uh-huh.
I mean, many of us are casts off from both the Democrats and Republicans who just couldn't take those two parties and their narrow agendas and having to adapt to what they say instead of being yourself. See, the great thing I find about the Reform Party is they let me be me.
So even if he were a pretty conservative fellow, which he is.
You can be conservative in the Reform. I'm fairly conservative. I'm just liberal on social issues. Like I was asked about Pat Robertson. They said, is Pat going to, could he be the Reform Party candidate? And I said, I didn't think it was likely because Mr. Robertson puts social issues on the front burner. We in the Reform Party do not do that. We don't put social issues on a front burner. We put what government should be doing on the front burner, and that is taxation, things of that nature that is government's job to do. That's on the front burner. It's not government's job, I don't think, to sit and dictate social issues to individuals in the world. And see, Mr. Robertson, he's very strong on the social issue department, so I really don't think he'd be a great fit for the Reform Party.
When can people expect their rebate, the tax, big tax rebate?
Right before Labor Day. We just had a press conference on it today. In fact, it went up.
Mm-hmm.
It reached the full cap. It made it to $1.3 billion. Unfortunately, the legislature capped it. I didn't, but I had to go along with it. Had they not capped it, it'd be higher than that.
Can we expect another one next year then?
2 years.
In 2 years?
Biannually. The biannual budget. At the end of each biannual, this June 30th was the end of the last biannual budget. Now, in 2 years, you can expect another possible rebate with surplus money again.
There are rumors that, in fact, the state is going to keep rolling up more money, even with the permanent tax cut. Is that true?
It's not a question of true, Gary. It's a question of if the economy stays like it is. If the economy stays as blusterous and positive and money-making as it's been, that could very well be true. But if the economy takes a downturn, then it could not be true.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're based a lot on the economy because so much of our revenue comes in as such. If you've got a high-paying job and you're making more money, you're probably paying more income tax than we don't expect. If you're making a lot of money and you're buying things, well, that means the sales tax is bringing in more than what we probably expected. Now, if the economy were to switch and people not getting the higher-paying jobs and not spending their money, well, then the opposite could hold true.
What are you going to do for your birthday? Thursday is your birthday.
Quietly, thank you. More important day to me is the 18th.
And
far more important to me than my birthday. When you get my age, Gary, I think you'll concur with me. Who gives a damn about your birthday when you get my age? But no, what's more important to me is the 18th. That's the day that the First Lady and I celebrate 24 years together.
Is that right?
Yeah, and I got married 3 days after my birthday, and that's a far more important day to me than my birthday. I'll be 48. And I think I'll stay there for about as long as Jack Benny did at 39.
Well, congratulations
Thank
on
you.
Both fronts.
Thank you very much. Appreciate
and,
it, Gary. Always a pleasure to come in.
Thanks for coming in.
Absolutely.
Governor Jesse Ventura, our guest this hour of midday. If you missed part of the program, by the way, we're going to be rebroadcasting this program at 9 o'clock tonight here on Minnesota Public Radio. If you can't wait till 9 or would like to listen to it on our website, it will be available about 3 o'clock this afternoon, and you can find our website at mpr.org. That's it for midday today. Gary Eichen here. Thanks for tuning in.